Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Hey folks, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for 6, 7 and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. Today, we are talking to Omar Angri of Margin Business, and he's talking about his specialization that he and his team specialize in doing about 1,000 listings a month of optimizing there for translation, optimizing for conversion, I should say, by translation and localization services in all the different Amazon marketplaces out there. So we're going to keep going with this interview. I'd urge you, if you have even thought of selling in a country other than US or UK, that you think this one through. There is a lot of money being left on the table by sellers out there. That might be you, in which case you want to up your game. And there's a lot of opportunity because if your competition is very, very poor at this game, and a lot of them are, then there's huge competitive advantage for you if you can be bothered to educate yourself a bit about how they go about this. So stay tuned and enjoy the show. Okay, so tell me about the A+ content. So you can change the... So I haven't actually tried to do this myself, so this is where the maybe it's a slightly dumb question if you've done it yourself and you're listening, but you can change what? All the pictures in A+ content by each country, is that right? Or is it just the language?
Yes.
So you can make it very, very specific. Okay, great. So that's our real localization tool that is easy to use, right? I get what you're saying. So I guess, for example, if somebody in Germany says... this is really well made and solid because they like that kind of thing, but you know, it's really difficult to use, then you have to put in some different pictures there from the Italian, say it looks beautiful, and therefore you have to show the beauty of the product, right? Is that the kind of thing?
Yes, exactly.
Got you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Exactly. By the way, like, if America's listening, that if you're trying to lump together Europe as a whole, there is a lot of similarities, obviously, from a distance, but the Germans are obsessed with engineering and products working well. The Italians love design. It's kind of a cliche, exactly. But it really is true.
Very good.
You would buy an Italian car because you love the excitement of it, but you wouldn't buy it for reliability. I mean, it's just a fact.
For sure.
They're getting better, but they're characterful and fun, but they fall apart in my experience. So yes, that's something to bear in mind. So, yeah, interesting stuff. So that's the localization piece. Can you give us some examples? We've given one example, but let's give us a couple more examples. Let's stick to Germany because it's the biggest market financially and therefore often the first one people go for. Give us some more examples of where you see American classic errors that American or British sellers make when they go into Germany in terms of localization. What kind of red flags should we look out for in our own writing sales copy?
For example, for Americans, from what I've seen, they have their market. I personally like American marketing because it's like a giant walking. It makes the air shake. You know, when you look at the pictures, it's like big impact script. You have, you know, I'm just picking something randomly in my head. You know, something maybe dark. It's very shiny. You know, it's flashy. For the US, it's something amazing. But for example, for Italy. You cannot get into it. Or for example, Germany, it's as well too much. So German really like it's almost like Italy, but it's a little bit less. So if it cannot be too much, and it needs to speak to the customer. They need to see themselves in there. So you cannot just come over with the American marketing and put this in front of a German customer. It needs definitely to be adapted. It needs to be less loud. Let's say it this way.
Yeah, I think what Americans look at German marketing and even Brits as well, it looks very bland and factual. And I think you need to get over that because your instincts will be to be in a country of shouting people, then the person who shouts loudest, that sounds very... it's not a judgment against Americans, but it's just a different... Even the way Americans speak. If you're sitting in a cafe in Europe, and this isn't prejudice, it's just a fact... The Europeans will be embarrassed because the Americans are going, "Hey, honey, put that down." And it's like twice as loud as anyone in the room. Now, if you're in America, everyone's that loud. It doesn't stand out. To some degree in Italy, by the way, it's the same. But if you do that in Germany,
Spain
or especially
well.
Britain,
in Britain,
for example, it's a British prejudice that if you speak loudly, it's a bit kind of uncultured, like you're a bit poor. Or I don't know. British upper class people tend to speak quite quietly. And these are weird sort of cultural prejudices. They're not right or wrong, but if you want to sell, you need to just respect that, and therefore you need to park your own culture. And I think that's really hard for a lot of people, and myself included. I mean, I've lived in Germany for a couple of years, so I'm used to the differences, But you have to accept it at some level and make your friends with that, because just because your instincts are screaming that it's right doesn't mean it is for the other person. And that's just a cultural translation thing, isn't it? I mean, I guess that's when you just have to hire a native speaker and trust them, because for you, it might look boring. Or if you're a German selling in America, it might look ridiculous and screaming. Like even Brits selling in America, I often look at their images and their copy and I say,
it's the same.
That
it's
is not exactly punchy same, enough. Yes. You need to be more aggressive, more exciting. You need to be absolutely cutting to the chase with the language. And, you know, Brits also struggle with translating into American. So it's not the only way around, you know, and we have to, you know, if you talk very quietly in America, nobody will hear you. So anyway, one more question I've got around this, actually. You were talking about this thing of trying to get around the fact that the nine main images, which do most of our marketing work for us, let's face it, we can't localize to countries. Now, I've tried with clients have suggested to me having separate ASINs in different countries in order to get around this. Is this, do you think, a viable way of dealing with it? Or is that too sort of messy? What's your thought about that?
I personally like everything in one place, you know. I don't like the different ASIN stuff. Or I mean, if this works, I have never like tried it myself to do this test. But I think it's messy for the upload and for the person as well working on there. And as well at the end when you want to, I don't know, it's for me it's not the way to go, you know. Yeah. I like it like, you know, it should be every one ASIN for this and this ASIN for that. It should be the best. Like if you get bigger and you have more, I've seen accounts where it's completely goes a bit upside down when you have lots of products. So yeah, it's just my opinion, you know. I know there's people doing it. I know there's people doing it good, but it's a different way of working. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've got very few products, like I don't know, 10, yes, then you could probably convey 70 ASINs. I mean, that's already going to be a pen, or 50 or 40, whatever it is. But yeah, if you've got a big catalog, it's going to be a nightmare to manage. I mean, I think you're right. The other thing is that obviously your average rating, you know, those critical stars on the search results pages is not going to translate, and the number of reviews isn't going to translate. So although the localization is good, you've lost the power of having lots of reviews. And, yes, you know, it's probably also better if you're selling a product to Germans who tend to be pretty harsh with their reviews. It's more like a technical analysis of German reviews sometimes. It's like, here's a 15-page report on your product. It's
and
so different from the German.
And,
yeah,
and,
with everything. You know. Like, but normally, here are the 10 things that are wrong with your product. It's the sort of thing that I would love to hire somebody like that as part of my product development process, because they would really hone it, but you don't want that in public. So I'd rather dilute something like that with some friendly French and Spanish reviews anyway. So yeah, it's interesting. It's one of those things you have to think through. It is an option. It's interesting that you don't completely dismiss it, but I think structural complexity is not what we need to add in our Amazon accounts right now, is it? Because as you said, they're already complex enough. And I think also if you're trying to sell that business later on, it's going to really confuse people. As I like to say, hang on, you got 15 different ASINs. And say, oh no, that's just one product. What? That's already a bad conversation, isn't it? So I'm kind of err on your side, I have to say. So let's talk about the words. So we talked about localization, but often, you know, we talked about localizing images in A+ content. That makes sense. People often dismiss the words because they think it's all image marketed. Do you think the words make much of a difference these days? And if so, why do you think that matters?
You think on the pictures? The words,
I mean,
on the pictures?
Well, that's a good question. Well, okay, let's talk words on pictures and the words in the rest of the listing. Words in general.
So we have seen a trend. What means like the first picture is a very, you know, very decent picture, which is white background and everything. But the second, we already begin to see a lot of lifestyle. For example, if it's a microphone, like in front of me, there is these, you know, the different here he got, you can turn it around, and here you can do this, and here you can do that. So it's already very, we go somewhere where I'm in a few years see that it's like a video already, you know, we're going to pass to a video. I think pictures at some point will go, but for now, what I see the trend is going is really that products will be already almost described on the pictures. I mean, not too crazy, but there is a lot, like there need to be information on there. Some people don't want to read, so they need to have a fast sentence which make them buy already on the pictures, and which they say, oh yes, that's good, you know, like I don't know, when we have the microphone here, what I have in front of me, and they say, or the headphone, what I have on my ear, noise canceling is a small word. We can just pop it onto the picture, And the ones who are searching for noise canceling, we definitely buy it, or they look into the next word, and there is another one, and there are Bluetooth, and there is another one. So small facts about the article is definitely good in the pictures rather than explaining the whole thing. The explanation or the direct explanation should be in the description, for example. So I would definitely go for at least like three pictures where we can really inform the customer on the pictures about what the article is all about, so they can see already in the beginning, or if it's, for example, shoes and they are vegan, that you have the vegan emblem, that you have that you have all these necessary certifications which make them stand out of any other competitors. So the more certification, the better. And this is, for example, what the German customers want to go for. They don't want, if they search for natural shoes, sorry, vegan shoes, they don't want any other shoes. They want the vegan shoes, and they want the vegan shoes with this certificate, which certifies 100% that they are good for the environment. So yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so I was just thinking about what you were saying earlier with having English plus the three main European languages that you probably go for. In most cases, depending on your product. I know, for example, in Italy, certain things, I know somebody did very well with watches and very specific things, but mostly it's Germany, France, and then maybe Spain. Even Spain can be quite small in my experience. So, but
yes, it is.
But then you said, okay, I want to see English in three other languages. I was thinking, wow, that's going to take a lot of space up. But I guess if you're using a word like noise cancelling, I guess it's only, you know, a shorter amount of text. So I'm taking that you're talking about translating two or three words, not whole sentences, right?
Yes, exactly. But there is as well one picture, for example, where we can go. You put, for example, the flag. You put the British flag, you put the German flag, you put the French flag, you put the Spanish flag, and you can put as well as put a sentence. But this, for example, I would put it like on the last picture, somewhere where it needs to be, this information needs to be on there, for example, you know. Maybe I would not go there, and for the item, maybe I would leave it in English, depending on the item, depending on the main country where it's going to be sold. If Germans see that item, there is some English words on it, I don't think that is too bad. Don't need to be German. But if you really 100% only sell it in Germany, definitely put German on there.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I would say, for example, with British sellers, that I know it's a lot of hassle these days to sell into Europe. I mean, it's weirdly, this is a post-Brexit thing. It's so weird. It's literally 30 miles from England to France. It's closer than I am to a lot of the rest of England. It's crazy. And in London to anywhere else, significant, 100 miles. Or, you know, 160 kilometers or whatever. Yes. But yet, it's like trying to ship to China right now. It's a super large amount of hassle.
Crazy.
So a lot of British sellers are, instead of thinking about Europe as a whole and just put everything in Europe, they're starting to VAT register for, say, Germany and just focus on Germany because that's hard enough. And I think that's actually not a bad approach for Americans as well. I mean, is that something that, obviously, it's a bigger strategy question than just translation, which are you guys, translation, localization, optimization for conversion is what you focus on. But as a sort of bigger strategic question, do you think that's a good approach, or do you think people are unwise and they should try and go for all of Europe and just see what works, kind of thing?
Normally, if we have companies from the US and they're big companies, they know about where their product's going to be shipped, where their product is being used. For example, most of the times for American sellers, they can see the map, and when it goes over, because you can still see who orders from you and pay even. And if they even pay the higher rate, because you don't sell in, for example, in the UK, or you don't sell in Germany, they can still see that somebody ordered. So then you can see, is it worth it to sell in the UK? Or is it worth it as well to sell in Germany? And if you have this possibility, definitely, I would begin with the UK as always, and then Germany at the same time. And from there, I would look at the other markets and check little by little, you know, because Germany and the UK will already give you enough headache. Sorry, I won't say headache. They give you, you will be very occupied to very busy, sorry, very busy.
That's very, by the way, what you just did is change from British culture to American culture, because in America, being negative in any way is kind of just basically rude. I mean, the Americans I interview for the podcast and speak to privately are the most incredibly polite people ever. Brits are ruder. They swear more. and they're more, they don't mind the word not or bad or awful. They're okay with that. So that's another, that you right there, you just showed that, like, localization. You were localizing to UK, and then you went, oh, hang on, that sounds very negative. And then you went on American, like, well, it's somewhat challenging. Well, Brit would say it's a pain in the butt. That's what they would say. It's a pain in the ass. I hate it, but it makes me money. That's what a British person would say when I'm speaking to them privately anyway, if they're not trying to sell something. So for a British person, if you're really, really positive, normally they're thinking, what are you trying to sell me? So, yes. But you're absolutely right. Whether you think of it as you're very busy, the American version is very challenging, or it's a pain in the ass, the British version, both things are true. You're absolutely right. I mean, I would say it's a pain in the ass selling in America, selling in Europe right now if you're British. So for Americans, it's going to be that little bit harder because, you know, the geography is a bit different. So I think moving little by little and starting with the obvious easy wins is a great idea. But I would say, and to anyone listening, I've just been banging the drum about this, and I'm going to do it again. Newsflash, folks, two things. Germany is a bigger market than the UK by quite a lot, if you're looking at revenue or gross market volume, whatever you want to call it. But also, American sellers speak English. Therefore, British market is very crowded with American sellers, and they're using PPC to sell their products. Germany has that barrier of entry because, well, perceived barrier of entry, even not if you use Omar and his team, of the language, and therefore it's just less crowded. And therefore, it's not just about it's a bigger market as a volume, but it's a bigger market potentially for you in terms of profit. I mean, is that just definitely. Me, or are you seeing the same kind of...
No, it's the same. It's the same. Well. It is definitely, because, I mean, if you look at the whole picture, Europe has about the same size as the United States, okay? So American sellers are very... They have the whole field in order to sell. Now, in Europe, Germany is really a big market. They really ordering a lot. Since COVID, it's even a lot more. I don't have numbers now in my head how much it is, but it's definitely a lot. And it makes 100% sense for an American seller to attack this market, a part of UK as well. But because at the moment there is nothing better and nothing bigger. And if you already established and big in the US, you have definitely enough resources to come over to build this up and to crush the competition. This is what we want to do.
Absolutely. And by the way, that's an Americanized, localized piece of language again. It's funny that I was thinking about, you know, localization isn't just about changing language. I mean, Americans try and sell in Britain and they don't quite get that either. I mean, I think localization in Britain is important. If you say crush it to a British person, that sounds like you're about to smash them in the face. Do something very aggressive. Whereas to an American, that's just normal business. So, like, you know, there's a level of aggression in the language, for example.
Yes, it's true.
In business to business language. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, this is just reflecting playfully on it because I speak to Americans all the time for my work, but there is a big difference. And as Brits, we kind of ignore it. And then we're suddenly very conscious of it in certain contexts. So that's funny. So obviously you're very, very expert in all these areas. So what services do you offer if somebody comes to you, like a UK-based person or an English speaker or an American company, and says, we want to sell in Europe, we want to do Germany and France to start with, what services do you offer them?
So normally what we do, like I said, we do the listing optimization and translation. So Amazon listing optimization and translation. Optimization in general is not only the keywords. As we have been speaking about as well, is the pictures on the side. We do the photo shooting. There will be a separate website as well, but for now the services are within Margin Business, and as well the A+ content, really the whole picture of the listing, the translation of the listing, the keyword research in the listing, the competitor research in the listing, the PPC keywords if need, backend keywords obviously. So we really take care in general of the whole picture of the listing to make it look like a really nice entry point for the customer who has already his credit card here and he just want to buy. When they come on the listing, they will say, okay, that's it. I'm going to buy. This is what we do. We help customers to sell more who sell on Amazon. And yeah, this is the main purpose of our business. And we have the staff, like I already mentioned, we don't hire on demand. No matter what project we get, obviously, if we get a project where we have to translate 10,000 scoop per month, then it's going to be different. But for now, we're running at about 1,000 per month, 1,000 translations per month. And we have the team who is there. So if we get more, that's not a problem. There is always somebody who is adapted to one project, who knows, for example, we know who is good for a higher level product who is good for example, for products which are going to be sold a lot during the day or which are going to be kicked out if they don't perform well. So every customer we can cover. We have the marketing trained people. We have the Amazon trained people. We have the content and copywriter, all the person in one go. So if we speak about seven languages here, if you go to Fiverr or Upwork, you have to hire seven people which have all these qualities, which you obviously can do. Yeah. But it will cost you more time, more money, more headache. Yeah. You need a manager who is actually hiring all of these people. So if you're a big business, you know that you don't have that time and you don't have really time to take care of this. So obviously you are better off hiring an agency like Margin Business or other companies which are out there, which doing services like ours.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is that people often think about the kind of cost structure of what is it they're buying. And the answer is, well, hiring people in itself and finding quality people and training them, that's so time consuming. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't do it. If you're running an 8-figure business and you want to do in-house translation work or a 9-figure business, maybe it makes sense to in-house it. But I mean, you've got to be very, very real about what it is you're doing. You're building a mini translation agency within your business, right?
And yes,
for
exactly.
most people, it doesn't make sense. If you even got 100 SKUs and you want to, you know, get a bunch of German translations done and French translations, and then maybe optimize them again in 3-6 months time, why would you go and hire
a new team? Yeah,
why would you hire an entire new team, distract yourself from your core business, and then go back to it and then fire all the people again because they've done their job? It doesn't make sense as a workflow. So yeah, I'm a big fan of hiring experts. And again, once again, I can't stress this enough. I can turn the economics of your business. If you get the conversion piece right, that is a one-time cost. Well, yeah, some refresher, but mostly one-time cost that will pay you back again and again every single time somebody comes to your listing. Whereas PPC will cost you money every single click forever. The same with your product costs, right? So I just think I'm a big fan of assets you create once and get paid multiple times for, and your listing is that thing. So I'm a big fan of this. I'm always begging people to do that, and I'm glad to have you as part of the team to offer that. So if people go to amazingfba.com/Omar, O-M for mother, A-R, then you can get a special deal from Omar and his team. Mention me, Michael Veazey, or Amazing FBA if you're booking any services. So have you got any special deals for the listeners, or is it just a standard thing?
Yes. If listeners come over, we can give a direct 10% discount on the first invoice.
Amazing.
This is for the listeners who came through this podcast, definitely. And I have as well a last message for everyone listening. And it's as well about the agency, what is going on at the moment and everything. If everyone have heard about aggregators, if you didn't heard about them, you will hear about them. They are big companies who are buying Amazon businesses. They do a very good job and they are super professional and they have a lot of resources in order to do this. We talk about worldwide. We talk about the US or Germany or the rest of Europe, no matter where. So they are coming in and they are as well having what you just mentioned, Michael. They're having these small agencies within the company or they are hiring agencies like ours, for example. Now, when we have other companies or business development managers who are up to now not having invested into listings, into PPC, really. I mean, look at the whole listing, look at the pictures, everything of the whole products. They will lose at some point because the aggregator companies have the resources and they will make this happen because they buy the businesses and they buy them to make them better. They're not there for just gliding through and get like 40% of the whole product, what they could take. They want to take the 100%. So they will put money in there. So anyone who has a small business or a medium or a big business and want to survive within the next, this is my prognostic, this is not written somewhere, yeah? But want to survive the next years, definitely needs to step up and invest into the listings, into the whole listing in order to compete with these professional aggregators or brands which are coming out of there.
Agreed. Yeah. So I think there are various step changes that have happened for various reasons over the time. I've been selling on Amazon since 2014 now. I feel like, in dog years, that's like, 50 years in the normal world. And I think you're, I agree 100% with you. I mean, the thing is, I've interviewed a ton of aggregators for the business. I've had clients that have sold their businesses, and I know now people who've become business brokers, you know, that sort of thing. So I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's an obvious thing, but people are just been, Amazon sellers have been looking at the aggregator thing with some interest, but in some cases, they've been saying, well, I'm not selling my business yet, so it's not relevant to me.
Exactly.
And I agree with you 100%. That is absolute garbage. It's so incredibly relevant, because whether you sell your business to them or not, you're competing with people who are suddenly incredibly well-funded. And they may not know Amazon as well as you do in some cases. That's your opportunity, right? But they know marketing, they know image marketing, they know copywriting, they know localization. And therefore, yeah, I couldn't agree more. You've got to up your game. So even if it looks at the moment like it's good enough to be mediocre, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this is a much broader message that I agree with you, that's good to get out there. Like, the aggregators are changing the game for everybody. And that's, you've got to up your game or get out of town, really. So I agree with you. And what better way to up your game than to develop an asset, as in a listing, that will pay you for as long as you have it? I mean, as opposed to PPC, which makes you money this month, and then next month the costs have gone up and you've got to change it again. We have to play the PPC game, but I always find it kind of depressing. Whereas I love great photography and great marketing copy. Yes. Can last for years. I mean, in the Amazon space, is very fast changing, but there was some subscription copy that somebody wrote for subscription to New York Times, and they tested against this control, and it took them 30 years of testing to beat it. Can you imagine that? That copy was the best copy you could have for 30 years. Now, this isn't quite as evergreen as that because it's Amazon, but it goes to show how much of an asset and a long-term asset really well-written copy can be. So I think people underestimate that at their peril, and you're the guys to do it. So just remains for me to say, Emma, thank you so much for coming on the show. Real pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And very educational stuff. And I agree with your warning about aggregators. I think that's an important point. So thank you for, you know, the warning. And also, you know, if people want to make sure they're proofing their business against that onslaught of competition, again, amazingfba.com/Omar, O-M for mother, A-R. You get a 10% discount off Margin Business if you want to go and use their localization translation services. And I reckon a lot of people should do just that. So Omar, thank you so much for coming on the show. Real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast for 6- and 7-figure Amazon sellers. I really hope you found the show helpful to you. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a quick star rating. It will take you all of 30 seconds to do it, but it does mean we can be found by and help many more e-commerce business builders. I wish you fast and profitable scaling, and I hope you enjoy the process of building your 7-figure Amazon business. Thanks very much for listening.